And I'm open to suggestions what to do with these maps. Be nice to put them somewhere. I've not had any calls from museums yet. maybe because they haven't seen them.
Lord, have
calls. But Lord.
I had somebody ask that does the live stream if they can take pictures of all the maps and put them on a power, I don't know.
We could take pictures and then send out an email to the folks who haven't been able to be here, and the photos can just be embedded in the email. They can look at it. That's one idea. I had suggested to Neil and David, because we were talking to Kathy the other day about maybe taking one or two home with them and let Kathy look at them and just bring them back. You know, there's nothing like really looking at them because they're three dimensional.
Somebody said put them on the website.
Yeah, we could do that. Okay, any other, those are good suggestions. Any other good ones?
You could mount them in the hallway.
We might could. Yes, with mounting tape or command strips might do it. Command strips might do it. That's up with command strips and it stays up. That's a pretty heavy map. So, okay, very good. All right, so we're going to set that to the side right now. Just leave it there, and we're going to move forward with our next subject, and that is Jesus and Jerusalem. So we're going to narrow down. We're going to spend a couple of classes looking at Jerusalem because it's easy just to think of land and seas and rivers when you think of geography, but what is a city but a world unto itself? And so understanding the layout of a city, how it's situated, is also part of the character. It's a character in the narrative, just like we've been talking about. So we're going to look at that now, but let's have a prayer as we're starting. Ray, would you lead our thoughts, please?
Dear Father, thank you that we can come here tonight, as we've been privileged to do for so many times in the past, for the purpose of remembering better and being encouraged by the sight of one another here about you, Lord, and your Son, Jesus Christ. And bless this class as we meet. Help us to remember the things that we're looking at tonight, that they can better help us to glorify you better. And be with those of us who are members of this group that can't come out at times like this, like Sherman and others, and ask you to bless them and those with challenges upcoming too, with surgeries and such. Help things go as well as they possibly can. In Jesus' name we ask all this. Amen.
Amen. So look at today's reading that was we had in our congregational reading, Matthew chapter 21. And this just happened to be a great intro to the subject of Jesus in Jerusalem. It's right where we're at in our scripture readings. Matthew chapter 21. Daryl, can you read for us loud and clear verse 1 and 2? And thank geography. As he does that, as we read that. Matthew 21, 1 and 2.
And when they had approached Jerusalem and had come to Bethphage, the Mount of Olives, then Jesus sent two disciples, saying to them, go into the village opposite you, and immediately you will find a donkey tied there, and colt with her, untie it, and bring them to me.
So, you know, this is the event of the triumphal entry. And look at some of the other details here. Daryl, will you now read verse 6 through 11?
And the disciples went and did just as Jesus had directed them, and brought the donkey and the colt, and laid on them the garments on which he sat. And most of the multitude spread their garments in the road, and others were cutting branches from the trees and spreading them in the road. And the multitudes going before him, and those who followed after him, were crying out, saying, Hosanna to the Son of David. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Hosanna in the highest. And when he had entered Jerusalem, all the city was stirred, saying, who is this? And the multitudes were saying, this is the prophet Jesus from Nazareth in Galilee.
How would you depict the atmosphere here? What are some good labels for this atmosphere?
Anticipation.
Excitement.
Somber. It's a serious occasion. Yes.
Celebratory.
It's celebratory, yes. They're praising Jesus. They really think he is the Messiah at this point. And this is how the Messiah is to be treated. And this is actually fulfilling prophecy about the Messiah. But wow, what a difference a week makes. The next time a crowd in Jerusalem shouting regarding Jesus, what are they going to shout in 6 days?
Crucify.
So this is the dramatic climax to Jesus' time on earth, Jerusalem. It's the set, it's the backdrop to it. Jerusalem is where it all ends. It starts in Bethlehem. He spends most of his time around the Galilean area in Galilee. But it ends up, the dramatic climax is in Jerusalem. And that's why Jerusalem is important. Matter of fact, I hope that even after today's class, that even looking at this triumphant entry, you see it differently. You see it a little bit more clearly what's happening here. Now, just because he spends this last week of his life in Jerusalem and all kinds of different things happen, eventually leading to his crucifixion and resurrection, understand that this visit to Jerusalem was just the last of a string of visits that had been referenced all through the Gospels. And I want you to think about, as we look at some of these references, what they have in common and how that Jerusalem represents something. That every time Jesus goes there, what? So, here's what we're going to do. I've got seven texts for us. Wow, look how that worked. So, table number one, you're going to do Luke 22. Oh, by the way, let me back up. If you want to open your atlas to page 24, that will be helpful. Also, I have given you, including a note sheet that has a map of Jerusalem in the middle and some organization for your notes on the sides, I've given you another sheet that's going to be very handy regarding today and next Wednesday's lesson. And Kim, when you're ready, you can just run that group. Never mind, we're back coming up here because we're done with the map. So if you want, if you need to go to a group later.
Okay.
So I've given you a handout that's got some diagrams, some models and stuff. So just have that handy. I think it will be helpful to you. But here's what we're going to do. So table number one, your text is Luke 2, 22 to 38. Table number two, you also have the latter part of Luke starting verse 41. Table number three, Matthew 4, 5, and 7. Table four, John 2, 13 to 22. Table five, John 5, 1 through 17. Table six, John 7. There are the references. And look at what a pattern. John's gospel says more about Jesus in Jerusalem than any of the others. And then table seven, you all will be working with John 10, 22 to 39. What I want you to do is scan that text. Some of these texts are longer than others. Scan these texts and ask regarding your text, when was this, if the information is there. Maybe there is no information about when it was. But oftentimes it'll say something like, there was a certain feast that was happening, and that's why Jesus was there. Because Jews poured into Jerusalem on feast days. And that was a common time when Jesus visited with his Jewish countrymen to Jerusalem. Why is he there, and what happened when he's there? What's he doing? What's he saying? What are people doing regarding him? What are they? How are they responding to him? What's happening? So just real quickly, look at that with your group. Discuss it. Write that down with your group. Then we're going to go around the room and find out what each group found regarding Jesus in Jerusalem. Okay. Just get a feel for that text. Listen to the other groups and fill in on your note sheet what they're saying. Sometimes it's a little tricky to get the when and the why, but I just want you to think in that category. Because on several of these texts, it's a feast day. So think about that. If Jesus went there on the feast day, that meant also what? A lot of people. Jerusalem could quadruple in size on the feast day. So that's insightful. All right, group number one, Luke 2. What's that about? What happened here?
It was that Jesus was about 40 days old.
Okay.
brought him according to the law of Moses, to present at the temple and make the sacrifice.
Right.
And he saw Simeon.
Right. Simeon and Anna both see him, and it's Simeon that prophesies, right? And actually, Simeon, what's Simeon's observation about this Jesus?
Simeon would live to see Jesus.
That's right. Simeon was told that he would live to see the Lord's Messiah before he died. And now he saw him, Jesus. So it's a confirmation of Jesus' identity as the Messiah. That's what happens here. In Simeon's prophecy and observation, it confirms that he's the Messiah. And he's there to fulfill the purification for Mary, the baby. All right, Luke 2, the latter part of Luke 2 over here.
Yes, the feast of the Passover when Jesus was 12 years old. And they brought him, as they did every year. And this was when he was accidentally left behind when they headed home, and he was in the temple listening and asking questions.
Okay, right. This is a really good text to help us understand Jesus' relationship with Jerusalem. He's going to come there frequently on these feasts, pilgrimage feasts. So he's going in and out of Jerusalem. That's the kind of relationship he had. Jerusalem was never a home, was never a base of operations. Most of his work teaching miracles done up in Galilee, and then some forays into other areas that we noticed early on. But Jerusalem is a regular, frequent place that he visited. And this is the occasion where he's left behind, and he's in there talking with the scribes, and says, I've got to be about my Father's business. So start thinking about what's in common with all these visits to Jerusalem. Okay, group 3, Matthew 4. Go ahead, Rick, go ahead.
Now, this is where Jesus was tempted by the devil in the wilderness, and he took him up to the pinnacle of the temple, which had to be Jerusalem, and tempted him to throw himself down because the psalm said, you know, that his angels would bear him up if he did such a thing. So the devil was trying to take him from the pinnacle of the temple. Right. Neil pointed out it was very high up because of the way the elevation of the land was.
We're going to look at that in just a second. Very good. Language went in.
Since he didn't have anything to prove to anyone, he did not take it.
He didn't do it, did he? Yeah. That's a perversion of the passage about the Lord's protection. This was a very prominent place, and you'll see just how prominent it is here in a few moments. Table 4, John 2, 13 to 22. What's that about? John, can you tell us?
Sure. So basically, the Passover.
Again, another Passover trip.
And he goes up, or he goes to cleanse the temple, and he's prophesying about his resurrection.
Very good.
And the wives, because the Passover.
Okay. And how did a lot of people respond when he's saying, I'll rebuild this temple in 3 days, which was a reference to his body? How were people responding to this? Were they just accepting it, or were they resisting?
It says in verse 18, they ask him, what sign do you show to us since you do these things?
Okay, so they were questioning why he's even cleansing the temple, and that's when he gets on the resurrection, which will be his ultimate affirmation. So there you go, showing his authority, and there are questions about him here. Excellent. Okay, John 5. Let's talk about that.
Okay, this is, again, the Sabbath feast of the Jews day, and Jesus healed the lame man who had been lame for, I think it said 38 years. And told him to take his pallet and walk, and forgave him of his sins. And the people, of course, were upset and started to persecute him because he was healing on the Sabbath. And
okay.
His response was, my Father is working, and I'm also busy working.
Ooh. He says, my Father's working, and I'm working. How did they take that? They thought he was making himself out to be
God.
God. All right, John, chapter 7, table 6.
This is the episode where his brothers do not believe in him, but they say that he should go into Judea and show his signs because, you know, he's been, all these rumors about him are everywhere. And there's a Feast of the Tabernacles.
The feast
is at this time. And so his brothers encourage him to go and show himself, and he says, I'm not going yet. But they go on. Later he shows up and has a controversy with the Jews there because of the healing on the Sabbath.
Right.
And the
whole chapter's about that, isn't it?
Yeah, the whole chapter's about that.
Yeah, and there's a big uproar about people, who is this? Is he the Christ? Don't know if he's the Christ. And finally, the officials actually tried to do what for the end of the chapter? Verse 44.
Well, it didn't get that.
Someone was seizing him.
They sent soldiers to seize him and arrest him, and this is the occasion where they come back empty-handed, and the soldiers say to the Jewish leaders, no man spoke like this man. So, very, very abuzz about his identity here. All right, group 7. John 10.
Okay, the wind is the winter, and the why is the Feast of Dedication. And what happened when Jesus went into the temple, the Jews asked him, they said, why are you keeping us in suspense? Why don't you tell us if you're the Christ or not? And Jesus said, I told you, but you didn't believe me because you're not my sheep. I have sheep, and my sheep believe me. And my sheep are protected. Nobody can snatch them out of my Father's hand. They wanted to stone Jesus. And then he said, why do you want to stone me? And they said, because you're blasphemous. You're blaspheming.
Yep. Okay. What do you see? When Jesus goes to Jerusalem, what are the things that you're seeing? Let me put it this way. Regarding Jesus, Jerusalem was the place where blank. What was consistent there?
Feasts.
Okay, he's going to the feast. That's where he ends up with a lot of feasts. Faithful Jewish pilgrim. What do you see?
It's where he was resisted. He was often resisted.
Okay.
By the authorities.
Okay. Let's build on this. There's a lot here. That's a great start. What else you see, Darrell?
Well, the temple was there, so this should be the center of God's people on earth. Literally the temple's there. He goes to the temple almost every time. Mm. But where they should be listening, they should understand that this is God in person talking to them, but they don't see it. It's just, ironic in a large way.
You're missing it. And putting it with Earl's comment, not only do they miss it, they actually are opposing him. What else do you see? Is this a...
Well, that's, and it goes hand in hand. Where all the conflict happens. It seems to be where everything comes to a head is in Jerusalem.
You see Jesus doing miracles in a lot of places. You see him question in a lot of places. You see the question about his identity occurs in a lot of places. You see that he's opposed in a lot of places. But here is a word that I think captures what happens in Jerusalem. All of that is intensified. He has more intense opposition in Jerusalem than anywhere. There is more intense controversy about his identity in Jerusalem more than anywhere. John 7 is a great example of that. And John 5 and John 10. And remember what John's gospel is about, to prove that Jesus was the Son of God. So a lot of the discourse is about the debate about whether he is or not. And guess where, in John's account, where a lot of that debate took place? In Jerusalem. And his conflict with the religious leaders. It happened in Galilee. Remember the preach the other day on the man let down through the ceiling? And there were scribes and Pharisees there who were critical of that. That happened in other places. It's intensified in Jerusalem. So conflict, debate, fallout from his words, fallout from his actions and miracles, all of that is just intensified in Jerusalem. Why?
It's where the religious leaders all get.
Where the religious leaders are? Yeah.
And they watched what went on 7 days before.
Where the devil was at work.
Okay. You know, it's like what Daryl said. Jerusalem should have been in this place where people were very much in tune to God. The temple, they should be seeing God there. But what a contrast. The very place the Son of God had the most problems was in the place where he shouldn't have had the problems. So that atmosphere did not help those people be spiritually minded. Not at all. And, you know, what you see here is that, think about this too. I asked the question, why? The religious leaders were there. More people are there at these feasts. And anytime there's more people, things get sort of charged up, don't they? They get intensified. It's a way to put it. And questions about his identity are just at the forefront when he's in Jerusalem. And it's the showdown place. Okay, those of you who are over 40 will get this parallel. It's like the old Western where the gunfight happens. Okay? I don't mean to trivialize it, but this is where the shootout is, in a way. And it's not literal shooting out, but it's the clash and the intense clash that takes place. So Jerusalem is so important in the ministry of Jesus. It's strategically important. He doesn't spend most time there. But it is strategic. Whenever he goes to Jerusalem, something big's happening. Now you may wonder, well, I can see that true of John 2, 5, 7, and 10. What about Matthew 4, Luke 2? Luke 2, he's a baby he's a child, he's 12 years old. Matthew 4 is when he's tempted. But all of those were about his identity. They're all about his identity. Are you the Son of God or not? There's prophecy and affirmation. This is the Lord's Messiah, and on and on and on. It's all about his identity and the consequences of his identity. It all is just peeled back and made very raw and bright in Jerusalem. So Jerusalem is very important to understand Jesus. You want to see Jesus, you want to really see him in Jerusalem, what's happening here. Okay.
Jerusalem's
any comments? Yeah, Jesus made that reference. In Jerusalem, he condemns them in Matthew 23. You killed the prophets here. And you decorate your tomb, and your fathers are guilty of that. So, and Jesus said he's got to go to Jerusalem because that's where he's got to be, meet his end. He's got to get there. Okay, anything else on that? The role of Jerusalem and Jesus. Well, let's talk for a few minutes about Jerusalem. We're going to work on Jerusalem today, the rest of the class today, and the next week. Here on the right side of your handout are some notes for you, okay? So we've got our hands out of the flower. Now we're like doing like note stuff, so more regular kind of stuff. So let me just talk a little bit about Jerusalem. And some of this is just really basic stuff, but it's really helpful. First of all, it's location. Here's a little trick or a little method to locate Jerusalem. You start at the Dead Sea, which is easy to find on the map. And you start at the northern tip, and then you go west. And there's Jerusalem. And Jerusalem is west of the northern tip of the Dead Sea and right in the middle of those central highlands that you've worked with lately on the map and on the relief map. It is up in those hills. Jerusalem is up in those hills. And this helps us to understand the scale of things. From the northern tip of the Dead Sea westward to Jerusalem is only 15 miles. And then from Jerusalem to the Mediterranean coast is only 35 miles. That's how close that is. I mean, how many of y'all drove 15 miles here today? A lot of you did.
Phil,
so, yes?
Just a question. Is that
Is that 15, 30 miles away? The crow flies?
Straight miles. Straight. That's crow flies.
Okay.
Yeah. That's crow flies. In those Judean hills, nobody walked a straight path.
Yeah.
So it's foot-wise, it's a lot more walking than that. Absolutely. Let's talk about this topography while we're doing it. Jerusalem is at around 2,100 to 2,500 feet in elevation, roughly. Now you may be wondering, well, make up your mind. Well, why would Jerusalem be from 21 to 2,500? Jerusalem is in the hills. Parts of Jerusalem is higher than other parts, as much as 100, 200, 300 feet. 400 feet. So Jerusalem is like this. It's like San Francisco. I mean, a little bit like Asheville, but actually Asheville's in the river bottom. You don't have that, but in Jerusalem you did. making sure. Yeah. And here's the other thing about that. It's in the middle of the central highlands. In all the mountains around Jerusalem pretty much are higher than Jerusalem. So Jerusalem sits like in a basin in the hills. You think of basin, you think of something flat. It's not flat, but it's in the middle of higher mountains. So if you're approaching Jerusalem from the east, the north, the south, or the west, you can't see Jerusalem. You don't see Jerusalem until you crest over a mountain, and as you crest over the mountain, there it is right in front of you. So think about the effect of that if you're a pilgrim and you're traveling to Jerusalem. You know, we got that section of the Psalms called the, just went blank, Songs of Ascent, thank you. The Ascent Songs. They're singing those songs as they go. And then they get to a certain point and they crest over a hill and there's Jerusalem right in front of them. And think about that from a fortress standpoint. That is a natural fortress. By the way, and we're not really focusing on the Old Testament, but in the Old Testament, who founded Jerusalem for the Israelites? David did, yeah. For the Israelites, David did. So David actually put it there. It was a purposeful capital. It was not just like a natural kind of thing where we happen to congregate here. He actually selected it. It's sort of like Washington, D.C. It's actually a selected spot for a capital. And it is naturally fortified by those mountains. Now, what that also meant, it's not anywhere near a river or a port. So that isolated Jerusalem, but it also protected it. So much, we're going to probably be reading in the prophets a lot next year. Common idea that the Israelites had, and the prophets had to dispel it, is that, hey, we're Jerusalem. Nobody can take us. God's going to protect us. And by the way, look at us. We're secure here. Well, you know what happened. Babylonians came in and wiped them out. So, a little bit more. I use this map. This is an old map. I spent a chunk of my day today looking for just the right map, and I never did find it. But one thing I want you to see in a lot of this topography is the idea of the hills and the valleys. And I've got some, you've got some other maps there that might can help you. I'll work off this one here because I'm near it. So, understand that this is a hill right here. And this is another hill. And what you've got is that you've got three valleys. You could call them ravines. If this was California, you'd call it a ravine. It's a common name in California, isn't it, Rick? Ravine? Okay, canyon. Oh, canyon. Okay, there you go. I wasn't out there long enough. So I want you to mark these. So if you want to pull a highlighter or a marker from your caddy or basket, I really want you to know these, because they really help you to understand the character of the city of Jerusalem. So get a highlighter or a marker, and I want you to note these three valleys. You also can look on your atlas, and it's indicated there. First of all, you've got east of the temple area, which is right here. This is the Kidron Valley. The Kidron Valley. And like Rick and Neil were pointing out, most likely this is the valley overlooking the corner of the temple where Jesus was tempted to cast himself down. So there's the Kidron Valley. And by the way, these are not river valleys. There may have been, in very rainy times, maybe a little wadi that would form, but basically, these are just dry ravines. south and to the southwest, right in here, is the Valley of Hinnom. Sometimes that's spelled Hinnom with an M. So south and southwest, it runs right through here. So mark that one. And then there is the Tyropian Valley, which cuts right down the middle. It's not as steep, but there is a smaller ravine or valley or canyon right in the middle of the city, right through here. So it's almost like you could take your fingers and do like the number 3 and lay that on a map. Okay? And have your. If I lay my 3 fingers like this, that almost illustrates the 3 valleys. This one is the Kedron, this is the Tyropian, and this is the Kinnon Valley. Thank you. That really gives a certain shape, a certain reality to that city. Now, when David built Jerusalem, it just consisted of this area right in here. Then in that period where the Greeks were ruling, the Seleucids, and then later on the Hasmonean, the Jewish dynasty that took over, they really expanded the city northward. And then Herod came along, he expanded the city, really built a lot of things in the city. And in Herod's day, in the Roman day, they really expanded this part of the city. There's a valley here, here, and cutting up the middle of it. So if you're going from one side of Jerusalem to the other, for instance, you're going from the Garden of Gethsemane, which is over here, more on this later, and you're going over to Pilate's, or you're going over to where the Sanhedrin meets, which is over here, you're going to go up and down and up and down. So when you went through the city, you were going up and down and up and down, which also afforded you a chance to always see the temple almost anywhere you were at, as it's high up, or to see other parts of the city. For instance, when Jesus and the disciples are in the Garden of Gethsemane, and a mob comes to arrest him with torches and clubs and swords, they see him coming. They see him descend one side of the Kidron Valley and come up the other side. They see him coming. When Jesus enters at the beginning of that week, we read about that in Matthew 21. When he enters Jerusalem, he would have come here down into the Kidron Valley and up to the Temple Mount. And so you could be standing in different parts of the city and looking down and seeing that triumphal entry. It's not like watching a parade in a city where you stand on the street and you're trying to see the floats and then it finally gets in front of you and you see it. No. If you were perched somewhere here or here or here, you could see that whole procession of Jesus on the donkey and people laying down the palms and their coats. It would have been some spectacle. Easily seen because of the nature of the terrain. Okay. You're thinking, you know, I said a while ago, these are not valleys with rivers like the Swannanoa and the French Broad. This is not the deal. That's why this city is here, right? This city started here because of those two rivers converging right here. That's not what you've got with these valleys. This area only gets rain for a few weeks out of the year, but they have springs. Several key springs water Jerusalem. And over time, they kept finding more. And that's what kept the city going. And think about that. Jesus, Jerusalem, and water. Springs. For instance, John 5, the man that was lame was healed where? Pool of Bethesda. Fed by a spring. So that's what kept things going. Think about what water meant to these people in this terrain, in this climate, in this agrarian culture. All right, back to the map that you've got there in the middle of your thing. Jerusalem's a very old city. It predates the Israelites coming in the land of Canaan by many, many years, hundreds of years. It actually, a settlement goes back there 2000 BC. So the city is about 4,000 years old. It was not a city much at first. It was more like a village. But this goes back to the time of Abraham. And if you remember the story about the sacrifice of Isaac, he takes him to Mount Moriah, which most evidence points to the fact that Moriah is just right north of where Jerusalem sits in the time of Jesus. So it's a very old city. I want to point out this part right here. This is the Temple Mount. More about the details of this next week. This is what is called the upper city, and then you got the lower city. Think about it. This is not always the case, but it's often the case. Socioeconomically, the upper city, guess what? It's higher in elevation. It's on a hill. The lower city is down in the Tyrophian Valley. Socioeconomically, who do you think lived in the upper city? The wealthy. So the upper city is where the Romans, where Herod and the Romans have built a lot of palaces and government buildings. And the Jewish leaders, like the chief priests, they lived in the upper city. And the wealthy aristocracy lived in the upper city. So when Jesus is taken to the power brokers, like Caiaphas and Annas and Pilate, that's where they're going. There's some evidence Pilate may have been working out of the fortress of Antonia up here. Some evidence is he's down here at Herod's palace in the upper city. But this is where Jesus was led into to be prosecuted and condemned, because that's the power base. Now, what do you see in these geographic realities about Jerusalem and the events of Jesus' time there? I've already pinpointed one about the miracles at the pools and references to pools, so it's important that the water is there. What else comes to mind? What events come to mind when you look at these basic facts? What comes to mind? What do you think of? Yeah?
Well, when you were talking about the mob that was coming to get Jesus, and I'd heard it, you know, before, that you kind of visualize that as something that all of a sudden they're there, you know. But as you pointed out, he could have seen them coming from a very long distance away and knew exactly what they were doing and coming for him, yet he allowed that.
Right. He and the apostles could have skedaddled. They don't skedaddle until he goes with them. And by the action of Peter, it looks like the apostles thought they were there to make a stand. Not the scene they thought they were making. What else jumps out at you when you look at the facts of Jerusalem and the Jesus events? This is a fairly sophisticated city, isn't it? Jesus is a country boy. Really, he is. Nazareth's a small place. It's a busy area, but it's a small, obscure town. Did you know that the Romans, they were careful where they put them. They had a theater here in Jerusalem for Greek plays. How do you like that going right beside the temple? Okay. They were fairly sensitive. We talked about that a few weeks ago in the New Testament history class. But this is a completely different atmosphere. This is reflected in the Rachel's comments. Jesus, every time he goes into Jerusalem in his public ministry, not when he's a child, not when he's 12 and all that, but the other time, he's stepping into the jaws of the beast here. Every time he goes in there. And then think about this. If he'd have stayed in Jerusalem, his earthly ministry would not have lasted that long. He keeps having to go in and pull out and come in and go out. Do you see how Jesus does that? He doesn't want certain things said about him. He doesn't want this to happen. He wants to wait until just the right time before his time has come. He references that in the Gospel of John. So when his time has finally come for this thing to climax, he goes in Jerusalem and he stays. And then it comes to a head. Okay, anything else? Okay, you can go to the pews and we'll work on this on Jerusalem more next time. Thank you so much.